We're back. Sorry about that interruption, but we're back to this rounds 4 and 5 in this battle between Jesus and the Pharisees. Hopefully you've enjoyed the last three that we've talked about. These guys are going back and forth, and we get to see the last two rounds today. We're going to bring rounds 4 and 5 together into one Sunday. But if you haven't been here, or if you maybe are struggling to remember, round 1 was about forgiveness and the authority of Jesus. Remember, Jesus, this man who's crippled comes to him, and Jesus says, "Your sins are forgiven." And the Pharisees are like, "Who are you? Who are you to forgive sins? Are you serious?" And so that they would know that Jesus does have that authority, he said to the man who was lame, said, "Stand up, pick up your mat." And he got up. So he's proving that God is behind him. God is behind what Jesus is doing. He proved it with the miracle, showing that he does have the authority to forgive sins. Round 2 is about Jesus' associations. Who's he hanging out with? How can you hang out with those people? The Pharisees look down on a lot of people. They just look down on people. And Jesus doesn't look down on anybody, except maybe the Pharisees. But they believe that he shouldn't have those associations. He shouldn't be hanging out with those people. He'll become unclean. And that's where Jesus gets to declare his mission. "Hey, I didn't come for the righteous. I came for sinners." It's not the well who need a doctor. It's the sick. So he declares his mission in their accusation. It's not just okay for Jesus to hang out with people like this. This is why he came. And until we realize we're among the despised people, we won't recognize our need for Jesus. It's pretty important. Round 3, the Pharisees go after Jesus for being too casual about worship. His followers don't take their religion seriously enough. They don't fast, meaning they don't abstain from food to show how spiritual they are. Prove their spirituality. And this is where Jesus brings in the bridegroom analogy, which is just this incredibly beautiful picture of the kind of relationship Jesus wants to have with us. So encouraging. He is the bridegroom. We are the bride. This is what he wants. And so in that, Jesus points out, you don't fast at a wedding party. "I'm here. The Messiah has come. This is time to celebrate. This is party time. There will be a time when my people will fast, but now is not that time." Well, rounds 4 and 5 are in Mark chapter 2, verses 23 through chapter 3, verse 6. And both of these rounds are about the same subject, a subject that means the world to the Pharisees. It means so much to them. And so they're going to go 2 rounds on this one. What's the issue? What's the issue they're going to deal with right now? Law. Rules. Specifically, the law of the Sabbath day. This is going to be really important, where there's going to be kind of a comparison between how the Pharisees look at the law, how they look at rules, and how Jesus does, and it's pretty different. And so we're going to see how Jesus looks at rules, how Jesus looks at law. And I'm going to warn you, there might be some tension in the room as we look at how this boxing match ends. Now, why would there be tension? Not everybody agrees about how we should look at rules, how we should look at law. And not everybody's going to like how Jesus handles this subject. So I'm going to introduce the subject by reading you a story that my kids brought home from the library that I think just runs kind of parallel to where we're going. This is called The Library Lion. Anybody read this before? My kids, nobody else. All right, this is new. So you get to experience Library Lion. This is a little bit of a longer introduction, but hopefully you'll appreciate where we're going, and I think this stuff really matters. So you can follow along. You got the pictures there. Pictures are really important when you're looking at stories. So Library Lion. One day, a lion came to the library. He walked right past the circulation desk and up into the stacks. Mr. McBee ran down the hall to the head librarian's office. "Miss Merriweather," he called. "No running," said Miss Merriweather, without looking up. "But there's a lion," said Mr. McBee, "in the library." "Is he breaking any rules?" asked Miss Merriweather. She was very particular about rule breaking. "Well, no," said Mr. McBee, "not really." "Then leave him be." The lion wandered all around the library. He sniffed the card catalog. He rubbed his head against the new book collection. Then he padded over to the story corner and went to sleep. No one was sure what to do. There weren't any rules about lions in the library. Soon it was time for story hour. There weren't any rules about lions at story hour either. The story lady seemed a little nervous, but she read out the first book's title in a good, clear voice. The lion looked up. The story lady kept reading. The lion stayed for the next story, and the story after that. He waited for another story, but the children began to walk away. Story hour is over, a little girl told him. It's time to go. The lion looked at the children. He looked at the story lady. He looked at the closed books. Then he roared very loud. Miss Merriweather came striding out of her office. Who is making that noise? She demanded. It's the lion, said Mr. McBee. Miss Merriweather marched over to the lion. If you cannot be quiet, you will have to leave, she said in her stern voice. Those are the rules. The lion kept roaring. He sounded sad. A little girl tugged on Miss Merriweather's dress. If he promises to be quiet, can he come back for story hour tomorrow? She asked. The lion stopped roaring. He looked at Miss Merriweather. Miss Merriweather looked back. Then she said, yes, a nice, quiet lion would certainly be allowed to come back for story hour tomorrow. Hooray! Said the children. The next day, the lion came back. You are early, said Miss Merriweather. Story hour is not until 3 o'clock. The lion did not budge. Very well, said Miss Merriweather. You might as well make yourself useful. She sent him off to dust the encyclopedias until it was time for story hour. The next day, the lion came early again. This time, Miss Merriweather asked him to lick all the envelopes for the overdue notices. Soon the lion began doing things without being asked. He dusted the encyclopedias. He licked the envelopes. He let small children stand on his back to reach books on the highest shelves. Then he curled up in the story corner to wait for story hour to begin. At first, people in the library were nervous about the lion, but soon they got used to having him around. In fact, he seemed very well suited for the library. His big feet were quiet on the library floor. He made a comfy backrest for the children at story hour, and he never roared in the library anymore. What a helpful lion, people said. They patted his soft head as he walked by. How did we ever get along without him? Mr. McBee scowled when he heard that. They'd always gotten along fine before. No lions were needed. Lions, he thought, could not understand rules. They did not belong in the library. One day, after he had dusted all the encyclopedias and licked all the envelopes and helped all the small children, the lion padded down the hall to Miss Merriweather's office to see what else there was to do. There was still some time left before story hour. Hello, lion, said Miss Merriweather. I know something you can do. You can bring a book back into the stacks for me. Let me just get it down from the shelf. Miss Merriweather stepped up onto the step stool. The book was just out of reach. Miss Merriweather stood on her toes. She stretched out her fingers. Almost there, she said. Then Miss Merriweather stretched a little too far. Ouch, said Miss Merriweather softly. She did not get up. Mr. McBee, she called after a minute. Mr. McBee. But Mr. McBee was at the circulation desk. He could not hear her calling. Lion, said Miss Merriweather, please go and get Mr. McBee. The lion ran down the hall. No running, Miss Merriweather called after him. He put his big front paws up on the circulation desk and looked at Mr. McBee. Go away, lion, said Mr. McBee. I'm busy. The lion whined. He pointed his nose down the hall toward Miss Merriweather's office. Mr. McBee ignored him. Finally, the lion did the only thing he could think of to do. He looked Mr. McBee right in the eye, then he opened his mouth very wide, and he roared the loudest roar he'd ever roared in his life. Mr. McBee gasped. You're not being quiet, he said to the lion. You're breaking the rules. Mr. McBee walked down the hall as fast as he could. The lion did not follow him. He had broken the rules. He knew what that meant. He hung his head and walked toward the doors. Mr. McBee did not notice. Miss Merriweather, he called as he walked. Miss Merriweather, the lion broke the rules. The lion broke the rules. He burst into Miss Merriweather's office. She was not in her chair. Miss Merriweather? He asked. Sometimes, said Miss Merriweather from the floor behind her desk, there's a good reason to break the rules, even in the library. Now please go call a doctor. I think I've broken my arm. Mr. McBee ran to call a doctor. "No running," Miss Merriweather called after him. The next day, things were back to normal, almost. Miss Merriweather's left arm was in a cast. The doctor told her not to work too hard. "I'll have my lion to help me," Miss Merriweather thought. But the lion did not come to the library that morning. At 3 o'clock, Miss Merriweather walked over to the story corner. The story lady was just beginning a story for the children. The lion was not there. People in the library kept looking up from their books and computer screens, hoping they'd see a familiar furry face. But the lion did not come that day. The lion did not come the next day either, or the day after that. One evening, Mr. McBee stopped by Miss Merriweather's office on his way out. "Can I do anything for you before I go, Miss Merriweather?" he asked her. "No, thank you," said Miss Merriweather. She was looking out the window. Her voice was very quiet, even for the library. Mr. McBee frowned as he walked away. He thought there probably was something he could do for Miss Merriweather, after all. Mr. McBee left the library, but he did not go home. He walked around the neighborhood. He looked under cars. He looked behind bushes. He looked in backyards and trash cans and tree houses. Finally, he circled all the way back to the library. The lion was sitting outside, looking in through glass doors. "Hello, lion," said Mr. McBee. The lion did not turn around. "I thought you might like to know," said Mr. McBee, "that there's a new rule at the library. No roaring allowed unless you have a very good reason. Say, if you're trying to help a friend who's been hurt, for example." The lion's ears twitched. He turned around, but Mr. McBee was already walking away. The next day, Mr. McBee walked down the hall to Miss Merriweather's office. "What is it, Mr. McBee?" asked Miss Merriweather in her new, sad, quiet voice. "I thought you might like to know," said Mr. McBee, "that there's a lion in the library." Miss Merriweather jumped up from her chair and ran down the hall. Mr. McBee smiled. "No running," he called after her. Miss Merriweather didn't listen. Sometimes there was a good reason to break the rules, even in the library. What do you think about that? Some of you are thinking, "Yeah, yeah." And others are thinking, "I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that." How do you look at law? How do you look at rules? People are going to either tend towards being rule keepers. Either you're a keeper or you're a breaker, right? A lot of people, they really appreciate law. They appreciate rules. Rules kind of give you stability. They give you something to hang on to and to know this is what's expected of me. And rule keepers would say, and it's rules that keep the world spinning around. Like, we need this. Not everybody feels that way. Some of you are there, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Some of us are rule breakers, and we feel constrained by rules. We feel like this is just kind of suffocating me. Or rules, maybe they're suggestions for other people, or maybe it's a hurdle to jump over. And we might say rules were made to be broken. Rules make the world go around. Rules are made to be broken. Different perspectives. And I want you to think about, where do you tend to fall? Where would you put yourself? Do you tend to be a breaker or a keeper? You love rules, or do you kind of resist rules? And this isn't like, okay, here are the bad guys over here, here are the good guys over here. I would guess in a church setting, in a religious setting, probably we would be drawing more people who tend to be keepers, right? But that doesn't mean these people are completely off the wall. Both people are off the wall in terms of how we look at law. That's where we're going today. Both sides are wrong. And so I just want you to understand, where are you coming from? Which place are you coming? Do you tend to resist, or do you tend to embrace law and rules? In our Dave Ramsey class, he would classify it differently. He talked about nerds and free spirits. And it's kind of a similar breakdown. There are nerds who, like in finance, is like, I got things all in a row, and this is how it works, and this is how I like it. Free spirits are like, hey, come on, I got a pot of money, I'm going to spend it how I want. So it's kind of a similar thing. Is there anybody who feels like, I have no clue which one I would tend to be? Anybody have no clue? If you have no clue, just nudge the person next to you and ask which one you are. They'll probably be able to tell you. So let's just see if we can get some participation here. How many of you honestly would say, you know, I tend to be a keeper? I tend to be a keeper. Just stand up. Stand up to get you're all in. I tend to be a keeper. I like rules. They give me stability. It's okay, all right? Okay. All right, thank you. Everybody write those names down, quick. All right, how about over here? How many of you tend to be a breaker? You're not really a big fan of rules. Stand up if that's you. Come on, it's okay. It's all right. Everybody loves each other here. Thank you. Okay, good. Now, I'm not going to leave myself. I was standing both times. Some of you who know me, where would I be? I hear some breakers. I hear some pointing over here. I would probably put myself over here, although I have, as we go, you're going to see, I have fallen over here too. I've fallen off both sides of the wrong track, but I tend to be a breaker. So I have to be careful about that, being a pastor, right? To be a little careful. So we got keepers and breakers, and we're looking at the Pharisees and Jesus, and the Pharisees tend to separate themselves from the sinners, right? So we would put the Pharisees over here, right? They're definitely keepers, and those who they would call sinners are on the breaker side. Reality is we're all sinners, right? Okay, so this isn't derogatory towards anybody. We're all sinners, especially Pharisees, right? No, not sorry. I have to be careful how I slant this because I tend to be over on that side. All right. Bear with me. If you notice, the book that I read kind of sides with my side, which has to be right. It's me and Jesus are up here together. So thank you for participating in that. All right. I've lost my place. Okay, here we go. Tell me this. Was Jesus a breaker or a keeper? A breaker? Jesus is up here, right? He was a breaker and a keeper, but in none of the wrong ways, right? Yeah, we would think, like, if you don't think about it all, well, he must be a keeper. He would keep all the rules. He would do it perfectly, right? We're going to find Jesus has the right view of law and rules, and so we're going to learn from him, and we're going to find him to be a breaker at times, and that might be awkward for us, but hopefully by the time we get through this, it won't be awkward anymore. But Jesus breaks some rules, and the reason why we're talking about all this is because in this match, rounds 4 and 5, Jesus breaks some rules unapologetically. Aggressively, he breaks some rules. And so we're going to look at that. Is it okay to break rules sometimes? I mean, we can read a library book and be, this is just a library book, okay? We don't get our truth from that. They're teaching something there, and we need to understand, is it right or isn't it? What are rules made for? Why do we have law? Why do we have law? That's a big question we're kind of looking at today. And I don't think this is going to answer all your questions today, but I hope it's going to get you thinking about how you look at things, how you look at law, how you look at people on the other side from where you are, and hopefully this is going to get your mind and your heart working. So, Jesus is going to break some rules. Let's look at it. Mark chapter 2, verse 23. If you have a Bible, open it up. Mark chapter 2. Verse 23, we'll read to the end of the chapter. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" He answered, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar, the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which was lawful only for priests to eat, and he also gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." All right. What's happening here? What's happening here? Jesus violates the law of the Sabbath. And the Pharisees have a big problem with it. How can you do this? How can your followers do this? And as we read this and look at Jesus apparently shrugging off the Sabbath law, how could it possibly be okay for Jesus to shrug off the Sabbath law? How could that possibly be okay? Look at what's happening. Verse 23, one Sabbath, it's the Sabbath day, Jesus is going through the grain fields. He and his disciples are walking probably along a path, and there are these grain fields growing up. And the disciples, they begin to pick some heads of grain. So this was normal. This was a normal thing that people would do. They were supposed to leave the edges of their field for the poor and the traveler, and they were supposed to leave some extra. So they're walking along, and there's some food there. They start to pick it and eat it. Pharisees have a problem with this. What law are they breaking? Those of you who are well acquainted with Sabbath laws, what law are they breaking? Harvesting on the Sabbath. Was it okay for them to walk along this path, wherever it was? That was okay. There was a certain distance they could walk. Was it okay for them to pick stalks of grain? No. No. Because the Pharisees classified that as harvesting. They were harvesting. They don't have combines out. They're not like gathering in sheaves. They're just picking a few. That counts as harvesting in the Pharisees' view of things. And I want you to see how horribly the Pharisees had mutilated the law of the Sabbath. So I went to Wikipedia, and I found an article called Activities Prohibited on Shabbat. So this is, I'm just proving here that this came from Wikipedia, and you probably can't read it. But they have all these different laws, and some are about planting and harvesting and that kind of thing. So no planting, no plowing, and then they define it. They define it. So plowing is promotion of substrate in readiness for plant growth, be it soil, water, for hydroponics, etc. Included in this prohibition is any preparation or improvement of land for agricultural use. Okay, you don't get to prepare your land on the Sabbath. But keep reading. This includes dragging chair legs in soft soil and thereby unintentionally making furrows. A seed could accidentally fall in this gap in the earth and a seed would sprout. That's against the law. Pouring water on arable land that's not saturated. You have water in your cup, you pour it on earth, that's against, you just broke the Sabbath. What's that? Yeah, can't go on earth. Because that, well, there might be another law for that. there's a lot of laws. Let me show you one other one. This one, just unbelievable. Extinguishing a fire, okay? On the Sabbath, you're not allowed to put out a fire. And here, look at this. While extinguishing a fire is forbidden, even when great property damage will result, in the event of any life-threatening fire, one is required to extinguish the flames. So they have some loopholes, but do you see what that says? If your house catches fire on the Sabbath, sorry, let it burn. Is that what God meant when he said, don't work on the Sabbath? That is ridiculous. That is where they'd gone with the Sabbath laws. There's more. You can go to that article and see what else is there. But it is crazy. It is crazy. We'll get to that slide in a minute. But I wanted you to see that these people had mutilated the Sabbath laws. What that article comes from, it comes out of the Jewish Mishnah. It's called the Mishnah, which is a handbook they put together to make sure that nobody messed up. Okay, here's God's law from the Torah. The Torah is the first five books of the Old Testament. That's the Bible. They said, okay, here's what God says in the Torah. Here's the Mishnah. Here's where we're going to explain what he meant. And boy, oh boy, did they explain it. And they expanded and just radically reinterpreted and elaborated God's original law. What have they done? What have they done to the Sabbath? This is not where God started. They turned a day of rest into an impossible burden. I read those things and I was just floored what they had done. This is what the Pharisees had done to the law. You see, there's a tendency on each side, if you're a keeper or a breaker, the tendency of the keepers is to use law to control other people. This is what they do with the law. They use it to control. And that's what the Pharisees had done with all they made. They controlled every move people made. And they had consequences if you violate. They completely controlled. They used the law to hold people in their grip. That's not the purpose of the law. That's not what it's there for. Jesus resisted that. So, if you find yourself on that side, that's something you need to watch out for. It's not a guarantee that you're going to do that, but that's what you need to watch out for. Did I use laws to control people? Now, this violation has happened, and the Pharisees come to Jesus. How come they're doing this? How come they're breaking the Sabbath? Jesus' answer is really interesting. Jesus could have said, "You guys have so missed the boat on the Sabbath law. You are so far off. Of course I'm going to break your stupid laws." But he doesn't defend himself like that. He uses something that he didn't have to, but rather than defending himself, he goes back to David. And he speaks about a time when David broke the law. Verse 25, have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. This is an awkward example that Jesus uses. Especially if you fall on the keeper side. David broke the law. He didn't just break the Pharisees' law here. He broke God's law. Leviticus 24 said the consecrated bread, that was the bread that goes in God's house and is before God all week long. And once a week, the priest could take it down and they could eat that. Nobody else could eat that. God said that in his law. And this is 1 Samuel 21 is when this happened. David and his men, they're on the run. They go to the priest for help. They're like, "We need help. We need help." And the priest, he says, "Well, I don't have anything to do. All I have is this consecrated bread." And so he runs them through a couple of questions. "Are you guys clean? Have you been pure? Are you honorable and holy?" And then he's like, yeah, we're good. And so then the priest's like, "Okay, now I'm gonna give you this bread." He gave him the bread. They ate it. The bread that God had said, this is for the priest to eat. And Jesus used that example that if we were to read that in the Old Testament, we might think, you know, David shouldn't have done that. That wasn't okay. Why does Jesus use this? It almost looks like Jesus is saying, that was fine. That was okay. So this is an awkward thing that Jesus uses. Is Jesus saying it's appropriate for David to violate the law because it was a special situation? The way he uses it here, it looks like Jesus is okay with that. Which, it's okay to feel a little tension about that. That's okay. Why does he use that example? It appears that there are times there are exceptions. There are exceptions, like the library line, that he needed to raise his voice at a particular time. Maybe there are exceptions. Now, the point of this isn't to look at where can I find exceptions to the law. God is good. He's given us good law. We're not supposed to look for ways around it, not at all. But we are supposed to look at how am I looking at it? How am I using the law in an inappropriate way? Pharisees are using it in the wrong way. So he's giving them a kind of a shocking example. And then he goes the next step and he says to them, verse 27, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. We're not supposed to be slaves of the law. That's not who we serve. We serve the God who gave us the law, the good God. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And that's the controlling thing. They have made the law their God, which serves them and controls people. That's not how it's supposed to be. So Jesus says this law, this Sabbath law, was made for man. It's made for man's good. It's not man for the Sabbath. You serve the Sabbath. You're a slave of the Sabbath. You better follow all of our instructions. And then verse 28, so the Son of Man, if David was apparently okay in doing this, the Son of Man, how much more the Son of Man? He is Lord even of the Sabbath. He's the king of this law. He was there when that law was made. So it's another statement of who Jesus is. There's something that just comes up over and over in Jesus' ministry, that Jesus is much more concerned about why you're doing what you're doing. He's much more concerned about your heart. Why do you keep rules? Why do you tend to break rules? That's going to show you where your heart is. Jesus' heart's in exactly the right place, right? He looks at the law correctly. He's the one we learn from. And he's more concerned about why are you doing it? What's your motivation? And we all struggle with wrong motivations. Those of us who are breakers, why do we break the law? Most of the time, because we don't want anybody to tell us what to do. We don't want anybody to pin us down. Where we become our own God. I'm above the law. You're not going to tell me what to do, and sometimes God's not going to tell me what to do. We're above the law. That's not a good place to be. We're above God in that place. Usually we break laws because it's about me. I'm being selfish. I'm late. I'm in a hurry. So it's no big deal to do 10 miles, 15 miles above the limit. That's not a big deal. Just shut up about it. I mean, it's not a big deal. I have places to go. I have things to do. That's not okay. We don't just get to just rewrite our own laws and just decide which ones we want to do and which ones we don't want to do. That's not okay. We're not being given permission to shrug off the law. But I think this whole thing is telling, use your head. Use your head and make sure God is God of your life. Not the law and not yourself. God is the king. So we need to use our heads. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Is there a legitimate reason for breaking this law? And you better be really, really careful if it's God's law. I mean, man's law, we need to follow that too. But there may be times to break that. There may be an appropriate time. If my child is deathly ill and I've got to get her to the hospital and there's no ambulance that's coming, I'm not going to do 25 in a 25. I'm just not. And when we were still having children and, you know, Anne's pregnant, I would daydream about, man, if I got to get to the hospital in a hurry, I'm doing it. I'm like excited about this opportunity. I'm going to do 100 miles an hour if I have to. And I would, I don't know if you ever do this, but I'm thinking about all the details. Cop pulls up behind me. I'm not pulling over. You can catch me at the hospital. That's okay. And maybe he'll let me off when he finds out what I'm doing. But does anybody else think like that, or is that just me? Okay. We have a game plan. We have a game plan. We're ready to break this law. And I would accept those consequences, whatever they might be, and hope that the police officer would respect my decision. But the law exists for our good. There's a reason we have those laws. So use your head. Don't see yourself as above the law. Don't use it to control. Jesus sums it up in this verse 27. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. This is the capsule. There's a lot that we can learn from this one statement. I'm not supposed to serve the law. The law serves us. The law is here to serve us. So I don't know how you're looking at the law, whether you're a keeper or a breaker, but the purpose of the law is to serve. This is what it's here for. That's what God gave us the law for. It's to serve. We are not servants of the law. We're servants of the Lord. There's a difference. There's a big difference. The Sabbath law is given to us for our good. There's a reason. God doesn't give us rules just because he feels like giving us a rule. Why? Where does the Sabbath law come from? You know how far back that comes from? A lot of you do, right? It goes all the way back to the beginning, right? God created in 6 days. Seventh day, God rested. Why did he rest? Was he tired? Was God sleepy, exhausted from all that work? God doesn't get that way. This is a precedent. He worked 6 days. He rested a day. This was a precedent for us. This precedent of rest and worship. It's a holy day. It's a holy day. By the time you get to Moses, the Ten Commandments, Exodus chapter 20, then God makes it official law. And this is a law that's for our good. This is right in the middle of the Ten Commandments. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. Now that's where the Pharisees had a heyday. What is work? Well, it's dragging a chair. It's putting out a fire. It's lighting a candle. It's taking too many steps in a day. What is work? And they created this whole huge scheme. On it you shall not do any work. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. This is a day that's given for our good. He has a good purpose in this law of Sabbath rest. Why did God make that law? We got the precedent, starts in Genesis. Why? Why did he make this a law for us? Did he do it because he's insecure? I mean, this is a holy day. We're supposed to spend that time with God. Is this like he's making sure we spend time with God? Like, you need to spend time with me whether you want to or not, so I'm going to make a day you can't work. You got to be with me whether you want to or not. Is that why God makes laws? Is he insecure? Does he need to force us to get close to us? There are some people who practice the Sabbath that way. Very legalistic. I do it because God says I have to and I hate it, but I will anyway. Well, that's missing the point, isn't it? The Sabbath was made for man. There's a reason he gave it to us. We need this. When God makes a rule, it's for our good. That's what rules are for. They exist to ensure that everybody has a fair shot. You know, if you're on the breaker side and you feel like, you know, sometimes the rules are stacked up against me and this just isn't fair. Like sometimes there are rules that are made to protect other people from you. Because we all have to function together. This isn't just about you. Laws are made, the speed limit laws, like that's for safety. That's so people don't drive into each other. You like to do 150 miles an hour on 737? Well, sorry, you can't do that. You're going to kill somebody. It's not okay. Those laws are because we need to work together. We need to be able to make sure everybody's safe. So we've got the rule keepers over here. Their tendency is to control with the law. The breakers over here, their tendency is to resist. And I'm going to add, there's another one here. We get two. We resist the law and we despise. There's a battle, this side and that side. These people despise these people. You trying to control me? Are you kidding? No way. I can't stand you. Get away from me. And there's some righteous anger there, maybe, because they're handling the law in the wrong way. So we will resist the law and despise those who are trying to control us with it. So watch for that. If you're over there, watch that, because that's how we're going to naturally be. And this is what I understand. I know about this. There are law keepers that I have despised. I think back to seminary and run-ins I had with librarians. I don't know why, but librarians, they only hire law keepers. That's who they hire. And I don't even remember all the issues. I just remember despising certain librarians. What do you mean I can't check that book out again? Are you kidding? Like some of the things that they did, like just made me mad. Well, maybe somebody else needs to check out that book. There's other people involved, but I can understand that. I can understand that tendency. That has happened to me. It's probably happened to you on occasion. Sometimes you may even be over here and you're using the law to control other people, and somebody else uses the law to control you, and you despise them. That can happen too, right? Anybody? Anybody? We all fall on both sides sometimes, probably. The Sabbath law. A lot of laws are made so we can get along, because we need to be able to do that. The Sabbath law, that's just for you. It's just for you. For your good. Because God knows you need it. Sabbath law was created for two reasons. One, because people need rest. We need rest. And two, because people are designed for relationship with God. We're made for that. So keeping the Sabbath, honoring the Sabbath, letting there be a holy day, that this is God, this is your day. I'm going to honor you. I'm going to rest. I'm not going to do all that stuff on my list. It meets both needs, because the Sabbath is about physical and spiritual recharge. You ever seen those 4D mag lights? Like super heavy 4D batteries in them. Like we're like one of those. You turn it on, you leave it on like 60 days. It's not going to have a very bright light. You need new batteries. You need to be recharged, right? We need to be recharged. That's a human condition, physically and spiritually. We need to recharge. The Sabbath gives us a chance to do that. Now, I'm not going to suggest that there's a legalistic, like you have to, this is the day, it has to be the same. But this principle of rest and a holy day that's God's, that's still very much for our good. Very much for our good. Because we don't just keep shining perpetually. We need to recharge. So God gave that law for our good. It's for our good. And I'm not going to tell you there's a legalistic way to keep it. But I am going to tell you God gives laws for a good reason. And he has good desires for us. And we can't go over here and take it to control and be like, okay, everybody, every Saturday, you're not doing nothing. We're just going to get together and sing. That's using its control. Like that's not where we're going to land. But we need to look at the God of the law and his good purposes in us for it. Whether you're a breaker or controller, we need to get back to the purpose of the law. It's to serve. It's to serve. It's for our good. Let me just show you how this thing ended up. This is the last round between Jesus and the Pharisees. Chapter 3. Another time he went into the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with a shriveled hand, "Stand up in front of everyone." Then Jesus asked him, "Which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?" But they remained silent. He looked around at them in anger and, deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts, said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. Some of the previous rounds have been kind of soft, where the Pharisees ask the disciples, "Why is he doing that? What's going on?" This is the most in-your-face round of them all. These guys are actually stalking Jesus. They're looking for a reason to accuse him. So they watch. Jesus goes into the synagogue, and they know there's a man who's got a physical issue. He's got a withered up hand. They know he's in there. They see Jesus go in, and they watch. What's he going to do? It's the Sabbath, and Jesus is filled with compassion, so he can't help himself. He's going to break the law. They're stalking Jesus, preying on his compassionate heart, his love for people, that he's going to break their law. And they watch him do it. And I love Jesus' response. He knows what's going on. He knows they're stalking him. He feels their eyes in the back of his head. And so he says, "Stand up in front of everyone. This isn't going to be a quiet, I'm going to sit down beside you and, you're better. Shh, don't tell those guys. Get up, stand up. Show everybody your hand. I don't want anybody to miss this." He's mad. I can't believe you guys. You've so missed this. This is not what the Sabbath law is about. Stand up. And then he teaches them a little bit before he does it. Which is lawful on the Sabbath? To do good or to do evil? To save life or to kill? And there's going to be some guilty conscience here. There's some irony going on here that when you think about what Jesus is doing, and you think about what the Pharisees are doing on the Sabbath day. They remain silent. They have nothing to say. They can't say anything. And if you look at the other accounts in the Gospels, give a little more detail. And in Matthew chapter 12, he adds this. A little bit of a parable to make them feel even more guilty. He says, if any of you has a sheep, and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out? Think about this, Pharisees. You have it. Everybody had animals. You got a sheep and it falls into a hole, and your sheep is like this on the Sabbath. You're going to leave it there until the next day? I don't think so. You're going to take it out. And at that point, understand how much more valuable is a man than a sheep. Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. And that's when Jesus said to the man, stretch out your hand. Stretch out your hand. And Jesus actually didn't do any physical work on the Sabbath day. He just spoke to the man. Stretch out your hand. He reaches out his hand, and this gnarled, crippled hand becomes whole. Completely whole. He didn't actually technically do any work on the Sabbath. But they had laws about healing. That was one of their laws, included healing. No healing on the Sabbath. That was actually in their law. It's ridiculous. No healing on the Sabbath. If it's not life-threatening, they valued life very much. So if somebody was going to die, if a woman went into labor, they were allowed to actually deliver the baby. Because life is very important. But there are very few exceptions, and healing is not among them. If it can wait till tomorrow, let it wait till tomorrow. He's had a shriveled hand all his life. Wait till tomorrow. Ridiculous. So Jesus heals them. They have nothing to say. The match is over. And look at what they did. What's their conclusion? After all these five rounds in the ring, how do they end this Sabbath day? Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians. Their enemies, Pharisees and Herodians are enemies. They begin to plot with them about how they might kill Jesus. Which is lawful, to do evil or to do good? Jesus is doing good on the Sabbath. They're doing evil. Jesus is saving a life. And they end out their Sabbath day plotting how they might kill Jesus. How do they think they're right? The problem is they're losing control. Jesus is taking their control from them. And they're going nuts. And they're going to stop it. They will stop this no matter what. Because that's how they look at the law. The law is the thing they worship. Because the law is what serves them. They're not worshiping God. They're worshiping law. Let's not fall there. That's not where we want to be. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So I'd like you to think about where you tend to fall. We all pretty much had a good idea where we tend, which side we're on. How do you look at law? How do you look at all of this stuff? Is the law used to serve? Or do you have this resistance going on, resistance to the law that comes from God's good law because he has good plans for us? Or do you tend to use the law to control and keep people where you want them to be? Both sides need to converge together where Jesus is, that the law is made to serve. Laws that I really, really believe in, I don't need to control people with. I need to help them. If I really believe in it, I may want to help them see how it can serve them and how they're missing out by not. Like, my belief in the need for rest, this Sabbath law, I think it is really important. but I can control people about it. But if I can help them see this is really for your good, that's good. That's good. But we have to turn away from those unhealthy ways that we look at law, and we have to put God back in his place. God's above all of it. That came up earlier. God is the one we serve. God is the one we worship. God is the one who's given us all of this, and we need to put him at the top. So if the tendency for you is to control with law, right now it's time to forsake that. It's time to confess it and turn away from that. We don't want to line up with the Pharisees at all. So that's something to confess. If that's a tendency, you've seen it, confess it to God. Be specific about it. And ask God to help you see law as Jesus sees it and as God made it. Now, if you're maybe more on the side with me, you tend to be a breaker, and you've got a nasty taste in your mouth for some controllers maybe that have been trying to control you, and or even just the law in general, like you resist God giving law. We've got to repent of that spirit and that attitude and trust God that his law is good and it's for us, for our good. And no despising other people. We just want to pray that God will bring us together under this same truth and handling law in a healthy way. We want to get to Jesus' heart. The whole series in Mark, a big part of it is understanding the mind and heart of Jesus. That's where we want to get. And I think this is a big thing here that hopefully you'll think more about it, how you look at things and how you handle this stuff. Because getting to where Jesus is where thrive happens. You're trying to control people, you're not gonna be thriving there. You're resistant to God's good law, you're not gonna thrive there. We gotta trust him. He doesn't make up laws at random. He has good reason for everything he does. He's a good parent, he's a good father, so we can trust him. God, I pray that you would give us the mind and heart of Jesus. That we turn away from the unhealthy ways that we handle the good things you've given. God, I pray that you'll bring appropriate conviction on those here who need it, myself included. And you bring us to a healthier place. Thank you, God, that you are good. What you do is good. We can trust you, and we want to follow you. Lord, I pray that as thoughts are stirred and ideas are rolling around in our minds, maybe not every question is answered, but I pray that we would go to you, that maybe there'd be more discussion about this, more conversation. I may not have said everything right today, so I pray that no one will take my word for it, but that we will seek you and what is your heart on this and what is your truth, that we would really understand that. Thank you for being so sure and so secure and so strong a foundation. Lord, I pray that our feet will be anchored solidly to you as our rock, as our foundation. It is firm. So make us strong in Christ. Amen.